Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we talk orchids. Selecting them, growing them, orchid varieties, taking your questions, and the guy to do it is Wayne King of Cottage Grove, Wisconsin. He teaches classes in orchid growing. He's a past president of the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison and comes by, every year about this time, isn't it, Wayne?
That's about right. Yes, Larry.
Every year about this time. And I'm really pleased to have him here because the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison hosts Orchid Quest 2010 on Saturday and Sunday, February 6 and 7. It's at the Exhibition Hall in the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. Saturday and Sunday, I've been there many times and always enjoy it. From 10 to 5 on Saturday and 10 to 4 on Sunday. And so we'll talk with him about the Orchid Quest 2010 and certainly about growing orchids and taking your questions. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Wayne, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry.
How's your how are your orchid plants looking these days? How many varieties now do we have?
Well, I have somewhat over 500 plants, and they're all different sorts of varieties. But over the years, I track and see how each one does and in what particular places, because I grow in the greenhouse and I grow under lights, and there are different climates in each place, and so I'm able to tell which ones I can do really well on and which ones I don't do well on. And that's not necessarily the same as someone else might experience, but my conditions are rather unique. And
So the conditions make a difference.
It make a big difference, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Let's talk just some basics to begin with here. Mm-hmm. The easiest orchid for most of us to grow would be?
Most, I would recommend a Phalaenopsis as a starter orchid. It's more like a house plant. It generally grows better inside than outside. Mm-hmm. It does well in greenhouses, but it doesn't like temperatures much below 60 degrees.
Okay. So if you keep a cold house, a really cold house.
Well, that probably wouldn't do that well there.
Okay, so Phalaenopsis is one. What's another one?
Well, my favorite and the ones that grow best for me under my conditions are the Phragmopediums, which are the South American lady slippers.
Okay.
And I have a much higher survival rate on those than on others, and they seem to tolerate a much wider range of climates.
If you were going to compare orchids to other flowers, are orchids as easy to grow as most houseplants?
Well, when you talk about orchids, you have to recognize, first of all, that there's a wide range. Some are very, very difficult to grow. And others, like the Phalaenopsis, are more like houseplants. So the nice thing about it, if you want to look at it the positive way, is that You can find an orchid for almost any kind of growing environment that you have. And if you have a cooler environment, then there'd be some types of orchids that would be better than others. If you have a very humid environment, then again, some others would be best. So you should really take a look at your growing conditions. And in fact, many commercial orchid growers that sell orchids that actually grow them from seedlings would know if you buy from one of those orchid dealers, and we'll have lots of them at Orchid Quest next weekend. They can tell you which ones would be best for your growing conditions. So if you're there and you ask those questions, or if you're some other orchid dealer, let them know what your growing conditions are like, and they can recommend the type of orchid for you.
That'll work the best. Well, mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Orchid Quest 2010.
Yeah. Well, the 24th year.
Yeah.
I think has become more diverse in that, so that we have about the same number of orchid displays, that is of growing live orchid plants, but we're increasing the number of art exhibits now in terms of ceramics, tapestries, rugs, paintings of various kinds. So quite a wide variety. So this year we're up to, I think I counted 49 total exhibits.
Wow.
And about half of those are art exhibits. So there's still, you know, a couple of dozen live plant exhibits, mm-hmm. which is one of the highlights of the show, of
sure.
course. But it's interesting to see all of this artwork coming into play with the orchid theme.
And, of course, you can purchase. I have purchased many an orchid there, as a matter of fact, quite a number of growers and sellers.
Indeed, yes. From all over the Midwest, one that has been a regular for us has been from Connecticut. So it's really been a delightful opportunity to have all of these growers in one location. They have a lot of choices and not very far to walk.
Yeah, and there's just some absolutely gorgeous orchids for sale there. Well, we have some emails coming in. If you'd like to join us, you have a question about growing orchids or raising them or types, varieties, maybe you have a question about Orchid Quest, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org and give us a call, shoot us an email. And Judy in Centuria, Wisconsin, has sent us an email. She says, I purchased two Just Add Ice orchids this fall. They bloomed beautifully until my sister from Florida came up and said that I should miss them. The blooms faded. This was about the 1st of December. What should I do now? Add ice water or what? And I don't know anything about Just Add Ice orchids.
Well, that's a fad that's come into existence in the last few years. And I'm assuming she has Phalaenopsis orchids.
Probably.
So unless somebody tells me otherwise, that's the assumption. It's not without controversy. First of all, you do cool the plants considerably when you put ice on. Secondly, the melt is going into the pot, and you can't be sure without being very much on the guard as to whether or not the potting mix is staying too wet. So you got a combination of getting the potting mix wet over perhaps several hours and then staying wet too long. And on the other hand, cooling the plant perhaps excessively, and then it'll be warming up, of course, as the ice melts. So there's so many variables here. It depends on, you know, what kind of condition your potting mix is in, if it's open or closed. And then also, you know, things like where you're growing it. You know, it's there are many other variables that determine.
So just add ice as you get these orchids, and then you just put ice cubes down in them.
Well, you actually just lay the ice cubes on top of the potting mix.
Yeah.
And then wait for them to melt, to wet the potting mix. And there are some ideas that Phalaenopsis flower spike initiation occurs when the plant cools.
Oh.
And so, you know, that I'm inclined to think that that's in a rare group of plants. That's not generally true and not to that degree. So I think you would find at this point that it's not a generally accepted practice.
Okay.
But, you know, it'd be interesting to try.
All right. Well, the second kind of part of this question is that the blooms faded. She misted them and then the blooms faded. Any comment there?
Well, I get a lot of questions on bloom fading. And one of the things, of course, that never seems to come up in the process is how long the plant has been in bloom. Of course, people tend to buy plants in bloom. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, you don't know how long it's been in bloom because it may have, you know, been in bloom for a week or two before they got it. So then in another week or two would be a normal period for the plant to begin to lose its flowers. So that's an important consideration. If, however, they just got it and the buds are just opening and it's fresh, there are fresh flowers on it, then we have to look at a number of conditions. But I think my advice to people when they get plants is, yeah, you need to buy them when they're in flower because you want to get a plant that you really like the flowers a lot on it, whether it's fragrance or color or whatever. But make sure you've got a number of buds also. Don't just buy plants that are fully in flower because the flowers may have been already quite aged.
So, yeah, I like to, if I can find one with maybe one bloom and then a lot of buds,
yes.
That's kind of what I go for.
I think that's a good practice, yes. Uh-huh.
So in this case, the blooms have faded. It may be just that the blooming period is over for them.
It may be normal senescence, and that is indeed possible. And people have to look at that as the first factor because that's the simplest explanation for
sure.
Why a bloom fades. There may be times when even if you have a plant in bud and the buds fall, you know, then you got another situation which is fairly complicated to look at all the factors involved. But the first thing is how long has it been in flower? And if you don't know, then senescence is a likely explanation.
Let's turn to Kelly in Cedarburg next. Hi, Kelly. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I've been enjoying your show for the last, I don't know, maybe 2 months or so.
Oh,
but
great.
I work on Fridays, and I've just so enjoyed being kept company by your show. I have a orchid that is called, I don't know what kind it is, but the common name is Jiminy Cricket. It's a white, kind of a spidery kind of a orchid looking, you know, when it blooms. And it generally only has one bloom that comes up, and all of the leaves are shriveled. You know, it's kind of like there's new leaves coming out, but they're just shriveled.
Okay, Kelly, a couple of questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
Does this plant have, we call them pseudobulbs, but they're bulbous swellings at the base of the leaves from which the leaves come out?
I can't say that they just kind of poke up out of the root, you know, mass.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're small little leaves, and then they come out, and they're really long.
Mm-hmm. And you say the flowers are spidery?
Yeah, they just look like they're not typical orchids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a dendrobium. It has these long kind of spidery kind of, I don't know how to describe it.
No, I understand. It has petals and sepals that are, you know, kind of
yeah.
long and twisty. And is the flower spike fairly long? And does it have a number of flowers on it or just one?
No, just one. And it's a large bloom. And it is a long spike.
Okay, it is a long
and
spike.
It's bloomed for 2 years right around February,
mm-hmm. Okay.
So right around this time of the year. And it looked really healthy for the longest time. It does have good root growth still, but all of the leaves are, you know, and they're long leaves,
mm-hmm.
are just shriveled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like they're almost not wanting to flatten out, you know, and they're just, I've tried giving it water, you know, I'm really confused about that guy.
Now, this flower spike, and you said it's flowered for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
Has it had more flowers on it in the past?
It seems like it just had two flowers, you know, one
okay.
each year.
Do these flowers have a, what you'd call a pouch on them?
Not a real defined one. But I know what you mean.
It
kind of has more like a beard, kind of, you know, it looks almost more irisy looking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. I just got it at Trader Joe's, and it was, you know, beautiful. I got it because it was real unusual, and I'm just, you know.
And you have it in a pot.
Mm-hmm.
I have a picture of it on the screen here. Is that one you sent in?
I actually know this one that I looked up online.
That's what Larry was looking up.
It's a white flower, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's a white flower.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one that Larry is showing on the screen here is most likely either a Brassavola or an Engraecum, and it's a mounted mm-hmm. plant. So I'm not sure whether it's the same one that you would
might
have.
Might not be.
But what I was thinking it might be, you mentioned the spidery appearance of the flower, is a member of the of Brassias or Brassia group that are spider, sometimes called spiderly orchids. But if there's only been one or two flowers at most on the spike, I don't think it would be that. The only thing I recommend to you, not knowing for sure what that flower would be or that plant, is you have not repotted it in the last couple of years, right?
No, it's really just... I have it's not even really in soil.
Okay.
You know, it seems to be really happy to be just kind of loose in there.
It doesn't sound like it's real happy right now.
No, you're right.
No,
you're right. It's not real happy.
Do you know where you can find orchid growing mix?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my recommendation for the time being, not knowing a whole lot more about this plant, is to get some of that orchid potting mix. They can get small bags of it.
Okay.
And I hope you have a pot that has a lot of drainage holes in it.
Okay.
Bottom. And take your plant out. Look at the roots. If you've got any mushy or roots that tend to pull apart, just take them off because they're not doing the plant any good.
Right. I mean, the roots look so healthy. That's why I'm confused.
That's good. Then what you need is a good mix, fresh mix, in which to grow those healthy roots. And you may see that future leaves that come out. It won't necessarily straighten out the leaves that you have a problem with now. But I would say future leaves, new leaves that have the fresh growing mix in the pot should look.
Maybe it's just nutrient.
They should look much better. Right.
Okay.
There you go, Callie.
All right. And shall I trim off the ugly leaves once new ones start coming along?
Well, you can do that. I mean, some people don't like ugly leaves. They're probably doing some photosynthesizing. So,
maybe they're not necessary for now.
Yeah. And I say check the roots because that will be important. And before you use the potting mix, I'd say soak it good. So you're using it wet because a lot of these mixes have fir bark in it.
Okay.
And those repel water
initially.
And
should it be in a larger pot or do they like smaller,
I would say use this pot size that just nicely accommodates the roots.
Okay.
Not too big and not too tight.
All right. Well, thank you. I just love your show.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking orchids today with Wayne King of Cottage Grove, a member of the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison. They have Orchid Quest coming up February 6th and 7th in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Net. A question about orchids or maybe about Orchid Quest 2010? I hope you'll join in. The number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Brent in La Crosse now. Brent, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Always been fascinated with the biology of orchids. And about 20 years ago, I was in Thailand, and I visited a orchid farm. And they had acres and acres of orchids, either for cut or for sale as a plant. And at the end of the tour in the gift shop, they had what, you know, back then I wasn't quite sure what they were. They looked like whiskey bottles, sort of the flat ones, sort of the breast pocket type flat bottle.
Yeah.
And they had them with, it looked like auger in them.
Yep.
Little tiny, tiny plants.
Yep.
And I'm years later, I got interested in mycology, and, it, you know, we call those, you know, tissue flats or tissue slants in sterile media. And I was just wondering if you could explain what I saw, and then I have a follow-up.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that, in fact, is the way the majority of orchids are grown from seed or from a meristem culture, and has been for several decades now. And it is an interesting process. I've tried to do it myself and had, you know, some success. But basically, you're right, it is an auger medium. The usual procedure is that you have two media that you're using with. One is a germinating medium, and the other one is what's called a mother flask medium, which is that once the seeds have germinated and you've got small seedlings, then The second medium is used, or media is used, to actually grow those seedlings and has growth stimulating substances in it. So there's a two-step process. First, seeding the culture medium, and then secondly, transferring them under sterile conditions to a growth medium. And after, depending on the conditions and the types of plants, it can be anywhere from three months to a year, bringing them out and then putting them in a community pot where they're all potted up together as a group generally. And it's called a community pot, and there they're left to grow for, you know, anywhere from a year to 6 or 7 years. But as they grow, then sometimes what happens after a couple of years is that they're separated and put into individual pots to grow up strong.
Interesting.
Okay, my follow-up is I occasionally go back to Thailand probably every 2 years.
Okay.
And I also grow mushrooms, and my mycology consultants say, you know, if you get any tissue culture in Thailand, you can from Thailand, you can bring it back as long as you declare it as sterile, edible mushroom tissue.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was wondering if that was the same for orchids, since it is a sterile tissue culture, if you could bring it back.
I think it is. It kind of depends a little bit on whether it's a species or a hybrid. Some species are considered endangered species under CITES, and there would be, you know, probably special requirements for importing those. So it kind of depends on what you're talking about. But if it's just generally, you know, hybrids or common species, then probably you could just do that. Yeah.
So if you didn't bring back just the common ones, you're still looking at another 5 years to get a pot.
Oh yeah, plant. Mm-hmm. Long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you also
out of tender loving care.
Well, that's exactly right. I was going to add that yes, the seedlings are particularly delicate and much more prone than adult plants to, you know, to bacteria and fungal infections, and so they're more of a challenge to grow.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Here's an email from Anne, who says, I seem to kill the orchids I buy. The flower stems turn black after a while. Is this due to too much water? And wondering what about the best way to water orchids.
Well, it's important to make a distinction between the plant itself, which would be mainly what you're looking at as our leaves, and the flower spike. And when we're talking about Phalaenopsis orchids, some hybrids, and most of the Phalaenopsis we get these days are hybrids. Some of them, the flower spike just naturally dies back, and that is because the particular species involved have that habit. And so that is normal, that is natural, nothing to be concerned about as long as the plant itself is healthy. On some Phalaenopsis, the flower spike remains green. So if that one the ones that remain green die back, then that would be a problem. But the ones that remain green, now those can be possibly induced. That same spike can be induced to put out a flower branch or a branch of the flower spike. So if it's just the flower spike that's dying back and everything else looks okay, then I wouldn't be concerned.
Okay. And another email, by the way, you can email us in with your question at talk@wpr.org. And we have open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Lori in Fort Atkinson, who has an email here now. She says, my father, who was an excellent gardener and is almost 90 years old, introduced me to orchids. Each year I'm given an orchid for my birthday from my son who lives in New York. They are Phalaenopsis orchids. The blooms remain for 6 months, and then the plant stays green for a little while longer. It seems that I lose the plant after 10 to 12 months, and then the leaves yellow. What am I doing wrong?
Well, And this is a flowering plant. This is a plant that has flowered. So I think that maybe the most common problem with situations like that is failing to repot it after it flowers in a fresh orchid potting mix. And when that is not done, then you start to root, the potting mix starts to break down and root rot sets in. And orchids do require a rather open potting mix where air can flow fairly freely through it. And so I would recommend at this point that that potting mix be replaced with fresh potting mix.
So when the orchid arrives this year, once it's done flowering, that's the time, then right after that.
Yeah, particularly for Phalaenopsis.
Okay. Well, that's what she's getting every year. So let's turn to Karen in Chippewa Falls next. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Enjoying the information.
Thank you.
I have a number of orchids, but two Phalaenopsis have me in doubt or in wonderment. One is doing something very unusual, and the other one is a worry at the moment. It had a very tall bloom stalk, probably about 48 inches, and that was the end of last summer. And I left the stalk on because I could see little, you know, green nubs. It now has two side shoots, about 8 and 12 inches long each, but from the very top end, it is starting to die back of this original stalk. The brown part is creeping on down. I did try cutting it back several inches, but again, it's still creeping down. That's my worrying one.
Okay. This plant is saying, whoa, wait a minute. we've got some new branches on our flower spike that we have to support.
Mm-hmm.
And so the plant sap is being diverted to those branches,
mm-hmm.
and those branches should eventually develop buds.
Well,
and,
in fact, one is has a large bud. It's almost ready to open. But,
yes.
How far back shall I cut it?
Well, you can cut it all the way back. Now, you'll notice that there are like joints in the flower
mm-hmm.
spike. They're called nodes.
Right.
And that's where your branches would come off.
Mm-hmm.
So I would remove the flower spike or the original flower spike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would cut it off just about an inch or so above the top node that has a branch on it.
Okay.
Because otherwise that flower spike is continue to die back to that
mm-hmm.
point anyway.
Well, and this is, I've cut it back a couple times.
Yes.
But evidently not far enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it should have some beautiful blooms, although it looks a little unwieldy because,
well,
of course, they're going off to the side.
What some people will do, and this only works if the flower spike remains green after flowering,
mm-hmm.
is they'll count up like to the second or third node from the bottom on the flower spike and just remove it there.
Okay.
And then the branches will come off from a shorter spike.
That definitely is what I should have done. I just knew I didn't want to cut it back totally since it was green.
It just took over for itself and made its own decisions.
It did. My other one, I think, is a curiosity. It also is a Phalaenopsis, and it has bloomed on lovely tall spikes, but for the last two times it's bloomed, and it was twice last year, it has had exactly one blossom buried way down in the in among the leaves.
Huh.
I've just never seen anything like it. No spike whatsoever.
What are you doing there, Karen?
I don't know.
It's finding a growing point down near the base of the leaf growth.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in Phalaenopsis, we call it the crown of the plant, but the crown is basically the heart of the plant, and all new growth comes out of that crown. And it's a hormone issue as far as the plant is concerned, because instead of sending up a flower or a leaf or a normal flower spike, it's basically just blooming right out of that area.
Well, it's just rather unique.
Yeah, it is.
It's a curiosity.
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you for your help, and
You're welcome.
Cut this back to an inch or so above its side branch, and we'll enjoy its flowers.
All right, Karen, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
We take some more calls here. Sarah in Harmony, Minnesota, up next. Sarah, hello to you.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm very new to growing orchids, and I received one as a gift last year, and it flowered nicely. The stock is still on. I may have just missed you talking about that. And it's doing great. Wondering, it's done flowering now, and I heard you mention you should repot it after every time it flowers.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And should I do that now yet? It hasn't been flowering for probably a few months now. Is that still too late, or do you have to pot them right away?
I don't recall if you mentioned that this was a Phalaenopsis.
I'm not even sure what it is,
okay.
Honestly.
Okay. Well, most likely that is what it is. And it still has the old flower spike on it?
It does.
And it's green?
Yes.
It's still green?
I think it's actually kind of yellowish.
Okay. Okay.
Sure.
Well, it sounds like a type that may just, eventually the flower spike may just die back.
Okay.
So my recommendation at this point is, yes, repot it in fresh orchid potting mix. Most of the kinds that are in use today have fir bark in them.
Okay.
So check that. And then before you use it, wet it down, wet the fresh bark down. You can soak it, in fact, while you're unpotting your plant.
Okay.
And part of the unpotting process is to rinse off the roots well. if you got any mushy roots or stringy roots, remove those because those are rotting.
Okay.
And then hopefully you have a pot that has good drainage holes in it. And you can probably put it back in the same pot unless you have a lot of root growth in there, in which case you'll need to go to a pot that's maybe an inch or so more in diameter.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, and is there a way then to induce the flowering, or just doing that will probably bring out some new flowers?
Well, normally Phalaenopsis orchids will rebloom annually. Most of them tend to bloom in the late winter, early spring. And that's when you would find new flower spikes coming, providing, you know, that you've got good, healthy plants and there's pretty good light. So, how do you tell whether the light is adequate? I would say if the leaves are sort of an olive green as opposed to a real dark green, that's probably the right kind of light for reflowering.
Okay. Oh, you want less light to make them flower?
We want light that will make the leaves olive green and not dark green.
Okay.
And that flower spike, it's going to die back. You can just, if you want, just cut it off.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for calling. And you can join in, too, with your question as we talk orchids with Wayne King. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Rosemary in the town of Merton. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi. I was wondering if you could give me some information about where I might be able to get supplies for the orchid growing, particularly pots. I have been getting my stuff at my pot plants at Stein's, just picking them up on sale, and poor little things bring them home. And I've brought some of them back into bloom and all the rest, so now I'm going to be up-potting on some of them. They come through awfully small and just with sphagnum moss at the base, which I don't like.
Yeah.
That stays too wet.
Well, good for you, because that is a problem. In growing in sphagnum or moss in general is a very difficult medium to grow in. Tends to stay too wet sometimes, compacts and reduces airflow, and then sometimes dries out too quickly. So, yeah, you need to use standard orchid potting mix.
I'm doing that, but I'd like to know where to get pots in particular. I have gotten them through Charlie's Greenhouse, which I think is out in Oregon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I've got some.
Mm-hmm. I had an old catalog, and when I ordered from them, I asked them to send me a new catalog. I've never gotten anything.
Oh.
And they said that they had to get the pots through the supplier, and then they would send them on to me, which became a very long, involved thing.
Yeah.
So, is there any place that you could recommend in the Wisconsin area or closer by? I will do it by mail. I don't have to run someplace for getting them.
Yeah, okay. There is a site on the internet called the Orchid Mall.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not on the internet, but I can have somebody else look it up for
me. Or else you can, if you want to just go locally, I mean, it would be nice if you'd come to Orchid Quest next weekend. There are growers that have lots of supplies there.
Well, the thing is, I don't always know what I need when I need it.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And I feel like I'm out in the boonies.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think of other local options.
I think that Orchid Quest is a good idea.
I'll see if I can talk somebody into it.
Yeah, make a trip out of the boonies for one weekend. And, it sounds like next weekend, in fact, the weather is going to be a lot milder than it's been the past week. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right, Rosemary, thanks for calling.
I'll check that out on the internet. Have somebody do it for me then. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you with your question about orchids. Let's go to David and Merrill next. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Last year at the garden show down in Madison, I purchased Bartley Schwartz Oncidium, and I couldn't get it to rebloom. I actually ended up splitting off some of the dead growth and putting it in a separate pot, and I'm wondering what I might have done wrong.
Okay, what was it growing in when you got it?
It was a plastic pot.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like normal orchid potting material.
Okay. And so it's not reblooming for you. Is that your concern?
No.
Is that your concern?
Yes.
Okay. Normally, these Oncidium types would come into flower late spring, summer. They like a fair amount of light, even though they're thin-leaved. They like a fair amount of light, and when they have new growth coming, they want to get a lot of water. So you want to be sure that your potting mix is in real good shape. It may not be after a year, or roughly a year anyway. And so what you want to do is this plant... Is it in growth now? Is it having new shoots come out?
It seems to be, and I might be behind on the watering because I'm starting to notice a little shriveling on the circular part on the bottom.
Yeah, and I would recommend that before it gets too far along in the new growth that you repot it with fresh orchid potting mix, and then you can water the daylights out of it because you're not going to, you know, be dumping water into a soggy mix.
Right.
And then feed it. Well, as soon as the new growth starts, after you repotted it, I'd use a 20-20-20 balanced fertilizer or something close to that. And then as the summer approaches, I'd go to a higher phosphorus fertilizer with a high metal number.
Okay.
And give that a try and try to increase the amount of light that it gets because a lot of the Oncidium members like a fair amount of light despite the fact that they're thin-leaved varieties.
I actually found that I might have overdone that. One book that I read, I ended up with, it described sunburn spots, and I think I ended up with some of those.
Yeah, that's a risk, and when you move it out to a brighter light, you should do it gradually, because the leaves will acclimate to the higher light, and then just move it in stages.
For that lady that was looking for pots, I got lucky and I found some... orchid pots that were called at Home Depot this last spring summer area.
That's another, either Home Depot or Lowe's is another. They do market orchid plants, and I know they have orchid potting mix, so I hadn't paid attention to the pots, so it's good to know they also, some of them at least have pots.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Appreciate the what should the pot look like? Well, I'll tell you what. Think about that for a minute. I got to remind everybody here that Wayne King's our guest today from Cottage Grove, member of the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison. Orchid Quest coming up the 6th and 7th of February at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. Talking with him today about growing orchids and about Orchid Quest. Give us a call with your question at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking orchids with Wayne King today. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. And Wayne, before we go back to the phones, Spencer's up next from Middleton, but what about these pots? You need a special kind of a pot for orchids in general, or is it depends on the type of orchid you have?
Well, it depends on the type of orchid you have. The most commonly used pots in this in the northern climate here is the plastic pot, and that helps to retain moisture longer. Clay pot is the other type, and clay pots tend to lose moisture fairly quickly through the walls. So for most type of orchids, whether Oncidium or Phalaenopsis or most of the thin leaf varieties, including lady slippers, plastic pots are the best. And we tend to want to go with those that have a lot of drainage holes in them.
Sure.
The clay pots, I find, serve two purposes. One is that if you have a top-heavy plant, you might put a plastic pot into a clay pot to stabilize it. And then when it comes to the cattleyas, which are the heavier plants, the thick leaf plants, I prefer to use a clay pot for those entirely. It's a heavier pot, and the plant's less likely to tip over, and you get more air movement through the walls of the pot with the clay. So it's just generally, I would say, go with those guidelines.
Let's turn to Spencer in Middleton now. Hi, Spencer. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I was just calling in response to a lady wondering where to get pots also. We're talking pots here. But Orchid Garden Center in Middleton on Highway Q is a great resource for orchids. And they actually, it's a beautiful place to visit in the winter also. There's greenhouses full of orchids. So it's a great local resource also.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And that's right in Middleton. Thanks, Spencer. Edward in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Edward.
Good morning. I also have a comment on where to find some local specialty gardening supplies. You can find those at Paradigm Gardens in Madison, Wisconsin, and they have some unique specialty, I guess, options for orchid growing media. One has been the cocoa cubes. Basically, it's a renewable resource from coconuts, and that has actually been working quite well for a wide variety of growers. And then I guess I had a question about artificial lighting for orchids and what your experiences have been and what seems to work best, because I've seen an awful lot of people spend an awful lot of money on orchids and then not have the appropriate lighting and or nutrients to get the success that they want.
Well, that's a good subject. It's it can get complicated in terms of looking at the spectral distributions of the lights and the amount of lumens produced and so on. But for general purposes, general growing, my preference is just for shop lights, fluorescents, cool whites, or you can mix them with warm whites. And then the big factor becomes how close the plants are to those lights. The nice thing is that you can get the plant's leaves almost up against the lights because they're cool and they're not going to burn the leaves. And I would recommend if you have, you know, 10 or more plants, then I would recommend that you get two shop lights with 4 4-foot bulbs of the type that I mentioned. I have mostly been growing under fluorescent lights, and I've tried both the expensive Grolux and wide spectrum lights, and I've tried the ordinary cool whites, and I don't find the difference that great that it warrants, you know, the difference in price between those bulbs. I mean, with a cool white, you can pay a dollar or two, and if you get the grow lights, then you're going to be paying $5, $6, $7 or more a bulb. I have tried to use the high-pressure sodium lights with some success. And, in fact, in the last couple of years, I put them on a light mover, which I got from Paradigm. And of course, I have a lot of plants. So I can light up a lot of plants with by moving that 400-watt high-pressure sodium, you know, over about a 6-foot, 6-by-4-foot area. And so I've been experimenting with that, and it seems to work well for some plants. I've had good success with encyclias under the high-pressure sodium. It may make a little bit of difference. I'm not over the cool whites, but the thing is you can't get them too close to the light because it's really hot, and so you've got to create a distance there for them.
There you have it. Thank you very much, Edward, for calling. And let's turn to Marilyn in South Range. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, and thank you for this program.
Sure.
About three years ago, we went out to San Francisco where my daughter was living, and her landlord had a nice garden in Oakland area across the bay. Maybe it's Berkeley. I'm not really sure. But he sent home with me some orchid plants. I think they're called Epidendrum.
Okay.
You know that type?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I have maintained them for the time that we have. The first summer they flowered, but since then I haven't been able to get any flowers off of them. Now, they're really pretty with little teeny flowers.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And where have you been growing the plant?
Well, I had them in the north window. Right now, I put them in a south bedroom that has a lot of light, but not direct light. It's kind of shaded a little teeny bit, but basically in a south bedroom. They seem to be doing very well there, and the one thing that I've noticed is the roots. They have aerial roots.
Yes,
the roots are really quite long.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's very typical of epidendrums. The canes on them get really long, and they have roots coming out from almost every node. And what I would recommend that in the wintertime, probably the south-facing window would be the best one. How tall are they right now?
Oh, the whole plant is only about maybe a foot tall.
Okay.
Some of them might be a foot and a half because they kind of snake around. And what I have done in the past is take one of the nodes with at least one root on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And snapped it off and put it in the soil.
Popped up, huh? Yep.
And that seems to work very well. But my biggest problem is I haven't been able to get them to flower.
Sure. And normally those reed stem epidendrums like a lot of light.
Mm-hmm.
And they would like to have a lot of light and warmth. So what I would recommend, you keep them in the south-facing window. Give them, as close to the window as possible, but don't put them, it's going to be real cold there because they like warmth and they like a lot of light.
Well, where they are right now is that type of thing.
Okay.
Because in Superior or South Range, it's not very warm right now.
Yeah, that's right.
They seem to be enjoying it since I moved them into the bedroom.
Now, in where you are in the summers, probably starting mid to late June, try to put them in a semi-shaded location outside.
Oh, okay.
And then gradually move them into higher and higher light levels.
Okay.
And that, those higher light levels, and again I say they probably like, I assume the ones you got came out of a greenhouse.
I don't know.
Okay.
Because he had a wonderful garden, and he planted them, outside.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they can do that in California. At least,
oh, right. Because Oakland is the right temperature.
Yeah, yeah it
is. And they
is.
Seem to like the moisture. That first summer up here in Superior, it was very humid.
Yeah, they do like the humidity. And one of the nice things about having them outside is that, there is the humidity, there's the air movement they like, and the increased light levels. So do you have them on a pebble tray right now?
Not really. I try to water them from the bottom, mm-hmm. and I probably should do that. I've thought about that.
Yeah, I think they like to have a lot of humidity, especially mm-hmm. you notice those aerial roots that are coming out. They're hard to water, but if there's a lot of humidity around the plant, then they can thrive on that too.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
And any type of fertilizer for, you know, to maybe get them to flower?
Well, yeah. You can try. What are you using now, might I ask?
Well, I haven't really used a lot of different things. So that's what I'm, you know, requesting.
Get something that's called a bloom booster.
Bloom booster.
Uh-huh. It would be like the numbers on the fertilizer would probably be like maybe 30, 60, 20, something like that. The high middle number is what you want to look for on the food.
Okay.
And then use about, maybe as much as a half a teaspoon per gallon of water.
Half a teaspoon per gallon.
And let it warm up to room temperature before you use it.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wayne King of Cottage Grove, our guest today. He is past president of the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison. And Orchid Quest 2010 is coming up Saturday and Sunday, February 6th and 7th. It's going to be at the Exhibition Hall in the Alliant Energy Center in Madison, Saturday from 10 to 5, and then Sunday from 10 to 4. And more information on that as well at orchidguild.org. That's orchidguild.org, or calling 608-231-3163. Wayne King, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network as we talk orchids with Wayne King, who is a member of the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening in today. Question about orchids or about Orchid Quest coming up in February 6th and 7th? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And before we go back to the phones, Wayne, I've got an email from Donna, who wanted to let our listeners know that there's a native orchid vendor at the Natural Landscaping Conference that's this Saturday. Your event, of course, is a week away from that. Scott Weber of Bluestem Farm in Baraboo will be on hand to talk to conference attendees about his work with native orchids. That's the 14th annual Toward Harmony with Nature Conference at the Oshkosh Convention Center on Saturday, January 30th. Registration starts at 7:45. So tell you what, another great event. And you know Scott Weber.
Yes, right.
And he's a very knowledgeable.
Well, he is. And he grows his own native orchids from seeds and markets them. And has served as our orchid photography in the past at our show, and also as a speaker. So, yeah, he's a very knowledgeable person.
You are also obviously very knowledgeable, too. And Cynthia in Lake Mills wanted to know when and where you teach.
Well, I usually depend upon invitations.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, those have come, they've come through Old Brick Gardens or maybe from Orchid Garden Center when they don't have people available to do that. Generally, it's been garden clubs, and particularly sure. over the winter when they don't have a lot of other things going on. Mm-hmm. So I've been, I guess, as far north as Adams in the center part of the state, mm-hmm. And then in quite a few places in between and in the Madison area. So if I get someone requesting a presentation on orchids, then I normally try to clear my schedule so I can do it.
Excellent. How do people contact you?
Well, in the past, I've gotten probably what they could do is contact Olbrich Botanic Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
They have some programs on their own, but they have my name also, so they could contact me directly.
All right. And, of course, Olbrich Botanical Gardens online, you just pretty easy to get that web address and go from there. Let's go to Evelyn now in Milwaukee. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I have an orchid that's 4 years old, and it blooms regularly, maybe twice a year. It's always blooming, and there's new shoots that are coming out now with leaves and you can see that those shoots are going to bloom. My question is, you've been talking about transplanting. It's still in the original, plastic kind of pot, and every time I think of transplanting, I think it's the wrong time. It's growing. So I'm not sure what to do.
Okay, good question. And I'm assuming, again, that we're talking about a Phalaenopsis orchid?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's white. It's a pretty typical one, white with a beautiful purple-pink center
kind of
thing.
Okay. Well, in general, orchids should be repotted after every flowering. And this would be particularly true for Phalaenopsis because they're almost always in growth. And,
right.
And now, part of the complexity here is if the plant is constantly in flower.
For buds. It's not sometimes not in flower, but I see buds growing.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think it's sure going to, it's about to flower.
Yeah. And over the past year, would you say that it has always had either buds or flowers on the flower spike?
Yes.
Okay. That
pretty much. You know, I fertilize it, and that's one of the problems. Maybe once a week, I water it a little bit, and I have it's in a gallon with fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
You know that I use that water constantly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that makes it, you know, particularly difficult decision on when you water because. Normally, we would, you know, or repot, either one. Normally, we would want the plant to be finished flowering before putting it in fresh potting mix. But now yours has gone for how long before it was?
Oh, it's been incredible. I'd say 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Well,
I know. Everyone is amazed at it, so...
Yeah, we every now and then we're going to come across a plant like that just wants to flower. And I think I would make two suggestions since it's the buds are just starting on the spike now.
Yes, there's new spikes coming up now, too, with leaves. It's getting quite a big plant now.
It sounds like we're going to have to intervene with this plant and repot it no matter what because we're not going to have ideal conditions for doing it.
Right.
First thing is that you need to get some standard orchid potting mix, and you need to locate that. Do you know where you can get that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Then what the next step I would do, and I'm assuming you have one that's fir bark based, because
it's a pretty good place. So
yeah.
I'll make sure to ask about that.
Yeah, and if it's fir bark based, and it probably should be. Because that makes it easier for air to move through it, I would I'd soak it, soak a portion of it that you plan to use, and then after you've starting to soak it, I would unpot your plant. I'd do it carefully.
It's going to be tricky. Okay.
Yeah, it will be tricky, and you have roots growing outside the pot as well, right?
Yep.
So when you pull the plant from the pot. And carefully remove the roots. You may want to water it heavily, maybe even soak it before you take it out, and the roots become less brittle when they're really wet.
Okay.
And then
water it, and then maybe wait a couple hours till it gets soaked in.
Yeah, I'd actually make sure it's soaked well, and the roots should be a green color then.
Okay, because some of them aren't. They're like those old roots.
Yeah, you'll have some of those, especially the ones that come out of the pot.
Right.
So when you take it out and you've soaked it good, you got green roots to what you can see, then you want to remove it from the pot, and you want to rinse all of the potting mix off from the roots.
Okay, so you're just going to gently rinse it.
Right.
Okay.
And then you want to... examine the roots, and if there are any that are mushy or stringy, take those off because that's root decay, and you don't want to repot the plant with those roots.
Right.
And then you need to decide whether, because once you remove the roots from the pot, they're going to spread out, and assuming you have a lot of healthy ones there. So you may need to go to a somewhat larger pot size, maybe an inch or so larger in diameter.
With holes in it, right? Those orchid pots.
Absolutely. You have it in a plastic pot?
No, but I bought an orchid pot for it. I almost think I need a bigger one now then.
Yeah, and
you know, the orchid pots with holes all over it.
Right. Well, for Phalaenopsis, my preference is a plastic pot with lots of holes in it.
Okay.
And the only time you'd go with clay on a Phalaenopsis is if everything is so big that it have a hard time keeping it in the pot and the pot
like
tips
plastic.
Over. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is there a reason for the plastic, or it just works better?
Plastic maintains the humidity better in the pot. Doesn't dry out as fast. And Phalaenopsis generally tend to be fairly low-growing plants, except for the flower spike. So you don't have a top-heavy plant there that you would need a, you know, maybe a clay pot for.
Okay, well,
now,
I can do that.
When you reinsert the roots, my preference is to kind of rotate the pot slowly as you lower the plant into the pot, and that helps to minimize root damage because they'll follow along the inside sides of the pot as you rotate it. So you kind of rotate it and slowly.
Slowly, I can picture this. Okay.
Uh-huh, yeah. And when you've got the plant, the roots all in the pot, and those that grow outside, you should try to get those in. But if it seems like they're still too brittle, I would leave some of the topmost roots. You can leave those and not put them in the mix. But get as many as you the mix as you can, and then add your wet potting mix. And you want to do this in a place where you can. You know, the pot can drain well because you'll have water.
So you first put the plant in the pot without the potting mix.
Yes. Uh-huh. You want to get the roots down into the pot.
And then you sort of sprinkle them in
and
somehow.
Yeah. Then you start adding the potting mix, and you'll want to gently tap the sides of the pot as you add it, so that helps distribute it amongst the roots.
Oh, this is so helpful. This is great. Thank you. And then it'll grow, it'll be healthier, right?
Oh, yeah, you need that. You may find in unpotting it that you are going to have some mushy roots there because the potting mix over the years has just broken down.
Right.
So that gives the plant a chance to send out new growth, new potting,
new roots
and new leaves. And it won't, hopefully, you know, if we do this right, you won't interfere with the new spikes coming out on it.
I know, they're so exciting to see.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
I'm so excited about it. Oh, this is very, very helpful. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Evelyn. Thank you very much for calling. Well, we'll take another call. Paul in Cascade, on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hello. My orchid, one of Ernest Betancourt's perlite wonders, is leaning towards the light. If I turn that around 180 degrees, will that grow more upright, and is that even desirable?
So what you have is you don't have a flower spike on it.
Not yet.
Not yet, right. And how long has it been growing under lights for, you know?
Well, it's not under lights.
Oh, it's not under lights at all.
So it's leaning toward the light that is
leaning
away.
Towards
so
the
you
light,
have
yeah.
light coming into the window.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I think it's okay to do that, and it will grow up more upright because it'll tend to grow toward the window. I would just urge caution that if you start seeing a flower spike coming on it, I would just leave it. Then I wouldn't change its position at that point.
Okay.
All right.
So as long as you just have vegetative growth, that's fine.
And one more issue.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the five leaves are deteriorating. Can I cut them off now, or should I let them fall off on their own?
Are they the lowermost leaves?
Yes.
Okay. And the rest of the leaves seem quite healthy?
Yep.
And what about repotting? Have you repotted it recently?
Well, no, it's in...
It's in perlite?
Perlite.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it out of the pot once a month and check for bad roots.
Mm-hmm.
But I put it right back in the same perlite.
Yeah. Well, I know that those growing in perlite tend to push up out of the potting mix or the perlite mix, which is what they're in. Are you having any of that situation?
No.
Okay, good.
I have aerial roots that...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they're normal, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think the choice is yours. They are going to fall off. And those are the lowermost leaves on the plant. So they'll naturally be lost. So whether you cut them off or not, they will dehiss or fall off the plant. They'll turn yellow, and then they will fall off.
That was a big word.
Okay. They'll fall off. How's that?
That's all, yeah.
So if you
want
to cut them off, you won't be doing any damage to the plant.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. And Maria in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Maria.
Hi. Thanks for the program. I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if your guests could talk about the wisdom of using 20-20-20 fertilizer every other watering for orchids versus varying between 10-50-10 and 30-10-10. It's something that I was recommended to me as being easier than using various kinds of fertilizers and just standardizing it, and that I would get the same results.
Well, I like your question because it certainly is an interesting one. History has it that the tradition is to change the fertilizer so that during the active growing period it's high nitrogen, and then when it's about time to flower, switching over to high phosphorus. And there, that probably still has its advocates, but there are those who now are saying that the high phosphorus is not going to do anything necessarily boost the flowering, actually start the flowering. But what it might do is make the color darker and prettier, and it might add to the flower size. So if you're looking to initiate flowering, I would say just stick with 20-20-20. If you've got buds already on the plant, so your flowering process has started, you might get prettier flowers and maybe slightly larger flowers by using the high phosphorus.
Oh. You know, I've also been told that by one of the local greenhouses that you shouldn't fertilize once your flower is in bloom. Or your plant is in bloom. And I have not found that consistently, that advice to be given consistently. And I water really strictly, mm-hmm. you know, once a week, and then every other watering, so the second week, I do fertilizer.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the common practice, I think, these days, is to water and fertilize every other time.
Okay, and I have just one more quick question. I have a dendrobium. It's called a Phalaenopsis dendrobium.
Mm-hmm.
And drop off of it.
I'm sorry, we missed that. What did you say?
The leaves do drop off of that, and I'm wondering if you have all the leaves drop off the stalks. Should you just assume that the plant is dying and you should just get rid of it? I mean, it can't photosynthesize if it doesn't have any leaves, even if it has roots, right?
Well, dendrobiums are an interesting example, and usually they're lost most commonly by watering them during a rest period, because dendrobiums have a distinct rest period, and when they drop their leaves, that means drop the watering.
Oh.
And if you continue to water them, then what's going to happen is that the roots are going to get wet and nothing's going to happen, and so they'll rot. So don't worry about the leaf drop so much. I would say suspend your watering during the rest period. You might miss the plant once in a while, but don't resume your watering until you see new shoot growth coming from the bottom.
Oh, thank you so much for your advice. I'm going to try to keep this plant going then.
All right.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye, Maria. And Sally in Wayland, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi, Sally.
Good morning. I grow Phalaenopsis and Paphlopidium, the lady slipper orchid, only because everything else, it's just too hard to get them to rebloom. I have really good luck with Phalaenopsis and the lady slipper. I have a Phalaenopsis. It's a dwarf, and I love it. I just cherish it because it blooms in a pale yellow, just blushed with pink, which is kind of an unusual color for the ones that I like to grow. This pale yellow, it's beautiful. Well, I have one now. It has two flower spikes, and the other day I was examining it, and I inadvertently knocked off one of the flower stems, and
I know
how that feels. You just think, oh, I have to wait a whole another year to see that flower spike come again. Just such a big fat bummer. But a friend of mine said, oh no, Sally, don't worry, don't cry. That some growers actually will purposely knock, if there's multiple stems, they'll take them down to one stem, because then when that one stem that remains flowers, it will be even more spectacular. So I've been telling myself that to make myself feel better. and I'm wondering, is that true, do you think?
I think there's some truth to it, and the rationale I use is that a plant has so much energy. And the question then becomes, where is it going to put that energy? Because when it starts to put it in one place, then other places, you know, are somewhat deprived from that. So, and this becomes a problem we heard earlier from a listener where the plant is almost constantly in flower. And if you don't have a good-sized plant, then it's what's going to happen is it's just going to sap all the energy out of the plant. So to get back to your question, did you break the flower spike off where it comes out of the plant?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that don't be concerned about it. I know you're frustrated because you'd like to see that flower spike bloom also. But it could still send up another flower spike.
Okay.
It's in the flowering season, so it may well send up another spike. So
we'll find out.
Yeah, because I wouldn't worry about that. I just, you know, make sure that when it's done flowering, you repot it, and I'm sure you know about that. So
yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sally. And Pat in Land of Lakes. Hi, Pat.
Hi. See, I was wondering, how can I get my anthurium to bloom again?
Don't know anything about anthuriums.
Anthuriums.
Not an orchid.
Not an orchid. That's right. It's a lily. Oh, I don't think we can help you on that one. But I tell you what, Pat, if you'll tune in, wait around. Next week, we'll have another edition of Garden Talk. And our guest next week is, I'm trying to think of who the guest is. Oh, I'll come up. Jim Packard will help me out on that. And we'll have, I'll give you that name in just a minute. And we'll probably have a good answer for you. In the meantime, I want to remind everyone, thanks for calling, but Shelley Ryan, our Wisconsin gardener, is going to be on next time, and Shelley's probably going to have an answer on that anthurium and how to get that to bloom. But I did want to take a minute on Orchid Quest because it's February 6th and 7th at Exhibition Hall at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison, Saturdays from 10 to 5, Sunday from 10 to 4. You can go online to the orchidguild.org. Just go to orchidguild.org. His phone number, 2608-231-3163, 608-231-3163. There are quite a few educational programs we never really talked about, but there are I know there's topics relating to orchid conservation in China's Yachang Nature Reserve, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another topic on how to get more orchid flowers to last longer on your plants, growing miniature orchids. That's on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And Orchids of Columbia is another Sunday program. So there are some nice educational programs to go along with just seeing all of the orchids. And Wayne, you'll be there.
Yes, I will.
Uh-huh. Probably I will. Both days, too.
Yeah, probably so, yes.
So is there a cost? What's the cost for entry?
Cost is $7 this year. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a parking fee to park locally.
Yep.
$10, I believe, for both days if you want to come for the weekend. But $7 for general admission for one day.
Well, I tell you what, there's a lot to see, and you'll be amazed at the varieties of orchids that you're going to see. And it just, you know, this time of the year, what could be better than going and taking a look at some orchids and maybe buying one or two? We've never been there yet. I think once we went and didn't buy any orchids. Otherwise, we always buy some orchids. Thanks to Wayne King, who is a member, past president of the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.